to be fair, I did keep looking at it, and the interest rate was actually okay. It was good. That's why I never did anything about it. Huh. But it had, I was literally only sitting on, you know, we were under 50 and we only had 15 years of the mortgage left to pay. So clearly we were paying a lot more capital and a lot less of the interest. Yeah. And in my mind, I was thinking that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But it actually really hindered us when it came to servicing, because we were just trying to get an investment mortgage and not touch that. Huh. And then it all came about that, well, you don't really have the servicing, even though we thought we were doing really well.
Yeah. You're listening to Property Investor Tales, stories from the front yard. Here's your host, Tabitha Bright.
Hello and welcome to Property Investor Tales, stories from the front yard, where I get to talk to the property investors from around Australia about their investing journey. My name's Tabitha Bright, and I'm the head of coaching here at Positive Real Estate, where we help people build wealth through property. With over 8,000 clients across Australia and New Zealand, there are some incredible stories to tell, which hopefully make your investing journey that little bit easier and will inspire you along the way. Today, my guest is our fabulous CFO, our Chief Financial Officer here at Positive Real Estate, Lynn Sampson. And today we discuss being an accountant in the Guernsey Islands, how buying the best that you can stretch to has served Lynn and Ian so, so well, and why apartments, counter to a lot of common thought, are actually an incredibly lucrative investment. So enjoy this conversation with Lynn. Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast today. My name's Tabitha Bright, as you guys know, head of coaching here at Positive Real Estate. Today I have the fabulous Lynn with me. Now Lynn is our CFO here at Positive Real Estate. She's been with us for around 5 years. And like all of our team, they're either on the path to investing or investing in real estate, that we are the cooks that eat our own cooking. Lynn and her husband, Ian, have done a fantastic property deal recently that we're going to talk about. Ian is actually our COO, our Chief of Operations here at Positive Real Estate. So they really are the power team extraordinaire here at Positive. So Lynn, welcome to today's podcast.
Hi, Tab. Thanks a lot for having me.
Super exciting. And I love to twist all the team's arm into an interview. we also have lots of client interviews, as you guys know. So Lynn, tell me a little about you and Ian and your journey, because you're not from Australia. Where did you start? Where did you meet? What was some of the journey? Because you've had a really interesting journey.
Okay. So we're both from Zimbabwe, and pretty much went from Zimbabwe to South Africa, did a stint in the Channel Islands in Guernsey in banking, which was very eye-opening. then moved on to London. We were in London for 8 years. Wow. And we've now lived in Australia for 20 years. So for me, I've lived here longer than I've lived anywhere else in the world. So
Right. So quite the journey. And the Guernsey Islands, tell me a little bit about that, because immediately I think tax avoidance and all sorts of things when I hear that. It's up there with the Bahamas, right?
not quite. So Channel Islands is a bit more legit. I had a fantastic experience. So we actually moved over there because Ian was with Ernst & Young. In my early days, I, as much as I studied to be an accountant, I swore I would never be an accountant. Huh. And I was in marketing and went to the Channel Islands and went to the for my first interview. And was told we do not need marketing in Channel Islands because people throw money at us. So what's your next skill? And that's when I got into accounting, and I ended up being a trust accountant for Rothschilds.
Wow.
So that was really interesting in that basically, very simply, they divided the wealth pool into five teams, And literally, you would know the people that were in the fifth and the fourth team, maybe. There were like your actors and actresses that we all know. Huh. And then literally in the higher wealth teams of like 3-1, and I was managing team one, it's people wow. you don't even know in the world. So yeah, it was quite interesting, all the things that kind of happen. And yeah, very, very, very interesting and eye-opening as well. Like certainly gave us a good insight into trust accounting, into unit trusts and all of that sort of stuff. So yeah.
Yeah, and how the wealthy manage to keep their wealth, I imagine.
Yeah. So wow. No, it was a lot of like family wealth. So there would yeah. be lots of members of the family that you were helping to manage. So yeah, it was very interesting.
Oh, fascinating. I mean, many of us, I know not everyone likes Succession, but have you been watching Succession, the TV show?
I've watched a couple of episodes, yes.
It makes me think of that. All right. And so tell me a little bit of your journey with property, because you guys have invested before Positive Real Estate. I understand you had a property in, was it Burley?
Burley Heads.
Yep.
Yep. So I think that's definitely a situation of heart ruling the head a little bit there.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be an investment property. It ended up becoming like our absolute love, and we probably should have either rented it out more aggressively than we did, or sell it or whatever. But the reality of it was that it was the source of many family holidays, and probably from an investment point of view was not necessarily the most lucrative at the time. But yeah, but we managed to finally decide to sell it. And that's when we kind of went, right, we've got to make a few more like sort of strategic decisions on investment properties and not just rule with the heart. So yeah.
Yeah, it is hard. We did a similar thing. I bought a, and this is many years ago, 2003, we bought a house down in a place called Venus Bay here in Victoria. Even the name, it was like Venus Bay, and all the streets were like names of the planets. So we had Jupiter Boulevard, and there was Saturn Place, and like it was all, and it was that kind of place that had the roads that weren't tar sealed, because I love that old like traditional batch. And we yeah. were tucked behind the sand dunes in this little new build that we picked up super cheap, I think a 200K or something back in 2003. But we bought it for the love of it, because we loved the beach. It had 22 kilometers of untouched beach, but it was outside that zone that they talk about for quality holiday property. If you're going to holiday let anything, it needs to be within a 2-hour radius of any metro. Mm-hmm. At least that used to be the rule. This was pre-Airbnb. And because it was outside that 2-hour, it was just a bit far for people to go, and it became a bit of a drag going down there. And it was one of those things we were ruled by the heart. We went and bought it, and then we held it for about 15 years, and it didn't do anything. And of course, if we'd held it through COVID, it would have probably gone nuts. I hate to think what it's worth now. I haven't had a look, but the heart is not always the best place to start with our investing, is it?
No, and sometimes, I mean, like, I don't even know if it, like, articulate this correctly, but if I knew now what we know now in comparison, then things like, for example, it wasn't an old dilapidated apartment, but it certainly was, like, we did renovate it, but it was always that sort of average apartment on the Gold Coast, and so would never like sort of achieve like high premium holiday rentals,
right?
And we were always competing against the next newest building that was coming on board all the time. So from a right. from that perspective, it was almost the sort of second tier holiday rental. We loved it. We thought it was like a palace, but it was never going to get the high premiums that you know, and it was on the beachfront. It had beach views and everything, but
yeah.
there was always other apartments that were newer and shinier and
Right. And outperforming. Interesting. And so on that vein of knowing what you know now, how has, I mean, because you're in a unique position, right? You as CFO, like you are part of the leadership team here at Positive Real Estate. You work very closely with Jason and Sam. So you're privy to a lot of conversations about wealth creation, about the property market, about risks in the market, about what works. You see, much like myself, you see what clients do that work, what clients have done or might have brought to the table that didn't work for them. How has being part of Positive Real Estate changed how you view property investing and what you do moving forward? What impact has that had?
I think probably just like as I say, you absorb a lot of the information by being in the roles we've in, and I've also especially pre-COVID when there were all the live events, I'd go to them, listen for myself, as well as like trying to understand from a business perspective. But I think the key is that there is a model that works, and you do need to have a little bit of advice on that. And like as I say, like so things where, I mean, I think of myself as being pretty savvy when it comes to money, but there's just certain things you just don't know until you know them. And so things like I didn't know, you know, old build versus new build, depreciation schedules, all of that sort of stuff that when you get exposed to it, you're able to understand it. And certainly in my position, I can understand it, but I didn't know all about that sort of stuff until I sort of was exposed to it. So, you know, that's probably the thing, is that there is tried and tested formulas that work, and you want to get on that bandwagon and then try to then adapt it to what your personal circumstances are.
Yeah, 100%. And so recently you have had a purchase. All of our team, like I said before, are either learning to invest, are getting ready to invest, or are investing. Mm-hmm. And you've purchased a deal through Positive Real Estate. Tell me a little bit about that property deal. How did you select it? What was your thought process? And what was the outcome? Talk me through the deal.
Okay. So again, a little bit of trial and error. So it started out that there was a property that was available that was sort of very sort of mid-tier, but it was guaranteed that there was already a tenant in it. It was just a new build, so it was brand new, but they had already just put a tenant in it a month before. It was 12-month lease, all the rest, and it looked such a safe bet. Now, because I haven't been necessarily like sort of on the property journey, things like we had not remortgaged in I don't know how long, so we were paying probably 50% capital down on our primary property, which was great. We were like sort of reducing that, but our servicing was not ready immediately to purchase, and that opportunity, we lost that opportunity because it was a ready to buy right now, and you know, we just weren't ready for servicing. But it was going to be a comfortable, safe option for us. It wasn't going to necessarily stretch us.
And then I'll stop you there for just one second, because I want to highlight the lesson here for people. So what Lynn's saying is, and to correct me if I'm wrong, Lynn, is you'd had a long-term mortgage that was principal and interest. You hadn't looked at it, at refinancing it or anything. So it was probably at a slightly higher interest rate, and it was P&I, and you were just chipping away and paying down your mortgage. Yeah. Which is what a lot of people do. Yeah.
And to be fair, I did keep looking at it, and the interest rate was actually okay. It was good. That's why I never did anything about it. Huh. But I was literally only sitting on, you know, we were under 50, and we only had 15 years of the mortgage left to pay. So clearly we were paying a lot more capital and a lot less of the interest. Yeah. And in my mind, I was thinking that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But it actually really hindered us when it came to servicing, because we were just trying to get an investment mortgage and not touch that. Huh. And then it all came about that, well, you don't really have the servicing, even though we thought we were doing really well.
We didn't
have the servicing. So then we had to then take the time and unpeel everything
and
back.
And refinance, and suddenly,
the reality of it ended up being that we went from not being able to service a $550,000 property to we were able to fund a $850,000 property, and the mortgage
the refinance
more than comfortable to do
okay.
it.
Okay, great.
So it increased our ability by 300K.
So there's a once again, there's a lesson in this that I don't want to bypass people. So sometimes we get in the mentality that we've got to pay debt down, and we do long term. We always have to have a plan to pay debt down. It's great to make some headway with your owner occupier because it is essentially bad debt. There's no, it doesn't provide you an income. What Lynn was doing, there's nothing wrong with it, but when she wanted to go and invest, the way that loan was set up and the 15 years left meant that her repayments were probably higher than they needed to be to support her being able to go and buy a quality investment property. So if she hadn't done that refinance and she had continued to chip away, she could have bought probably a middle range property at around that 500K, which then maybe would not have had the capital growth and the success that when she refinanced and it improved her servicing because her repayments lowered, she might have gone interest only for the short term, so that it enabled her to borrow more. And when she was able to borrow more, she was able to do a better class of property that got a far better result. So tell us what you actually ended up buying, Lynn. You bought a property for 800 and...
So we ended up buying a property, a two-bedroom, two-bathroom apartment for $850,000, through Positive.
In Brisbane?
I suppose, I've done the sums, and you look at the fact that 2 years ago, if we'd been able to buy that property for $550,000, I've done the sums and gone, okay, even on the financing, we'd have been income generating immediately. Even taking all that rent, it was only going to be, I think it was about $500 a week that we were going to get on it. It all stacked up. That same property, so 2 years on, we've bought off the plan at $850,000. By the time we purchased it, by the time it finalized 6 months ago, that same property had gone from $850,000 to $1.3 million.
Wow.
Yep. And so then when I started to do the sums, and the other added to that was it went to $1.3 million, and our rent, when we went into the deal, we were told we were going to get between $750 and $800 a week in rent. By the time we were renting it, we got $1,150.
Wow.
A week.
Wow.
Yes.
That's nuts.
So that is a 7.5% to 8% yield on our purchase price.
Wow. Okay. And so this is interesting because there's a lot of information that's coming out at the moment. I think even yesterday, the Fin Review had an article about how we're beginning to see the pressure finally on apartments and units, because as houses and townhouses become more unaffordable and we see those price increases, and these price increases aren't going to stop anytime soon, folks. They've flattened off already. The slowdown in the market that the lenders and other market professionals were saying was going to happen hasn't happened to the extent. There's no 40% drop. We have now people's mentality stabilizing around what's happening in the market, and we can see that even in Melbourne, clearance rates were back up at 80%. About a weekend ago. So that's a market that is heating up again. Add to that your immigration and the lack of supply. There is no way that this is going to get easier and more affordable for housing. So we're seeing this pressure on units beginning to come through, which is what Lynn has experienced. So she's bought off the plan at 850 an apartment, something that a lot of people are cautious and scared about doing. There's this old story that apartments don't get capital growth the same way houses do. Well, I refute that. This is not a story on its own. I've had another client, Michelle, who I might try to talk into doing a podcast for us. And she has also made a similar amount in the market, a similar story. I think Michelle made around 480K. You've made 450K capital growth in 2 years' time, Lynn. I mean, that's amazing.
And only paying 10% and only paying for 10%. Deposit.
Yeah, 10% down for those 2 years. And God, what's the return? You as CFO can work that out for me. Your return on investment. You do those numbers. But the trick here is buying quality property. So don't go and buy the investment quality apartment that, you know, has no soundproofing, 800 units in the block, no sunlight, no decent floor plan. Lynn, your apartment comes with two car parks. It's in a premium building, a boutique.
So that is one thing that we did stretch for, and that was the it was an additional 50,000. So it was going to be 700 and something. We then put the 55 towards an extra parking space. Great. And I do think, like, as I say, at first you're hesitant. You go, oh, should I do it? Should I do it? But actually, I do think that it is worth it, especially when you are trying to command those high professional rents.
Yeah.
You do either accept that it's two professionals using the two bedrooms or a professional couple, and they will have two cars. Yeah. And I think that it just then opens the market for that high-end rent to those professionals, because it sort of brings me back to a slight example with us. Was, as I said, we spent 8 years in London, and Australia has even got anywhere close with the fact that, you know, like, property is at a premium. We are starting to see those, like, pushes on rent and that now.
Yeah.
But like 20 years ago when we lived in London, it was very acceptable for two professional couples to live in one apartment together. If it was two bedroom, two bathroom apartment, we shared for 2 years when we first got to London, because there was no way that we could afford an apartment on our own. That's and we nuts. Were, you know, two couples married and everything. And I mean, at the time, Ian and I were in banks and we were earning a fortune, but it just was not even the done not thing feasible. To try and get an apartment on your own. And you will start to see that here as there is a push, because people want to live in the nice areas.
Yeah.
And so it will be that, you know, those people like sharing and stuff like that again. So you want to facilitate that. And that's when we said, like, two car parking spaces was essential. And as it's turned out, the people that are renting from us are in the in medical. One's a doctor and the other's an anaesthetist. And, you know, they've got two small children, and they've taken the apartment.
Lifestyle.
Yeah. And, you know, we probably had about two or three applications of similar quality tenants.
Yeah, because you're close to the CBD in Brisbane. You're in a one of the premium suburbs in Brisbane, and you've got a boutique apartment in a boutique development. Yeah, it's not like a big crazy high rise. It's a
And there's lots of facilities around it. So that's why I think you can live in a smaller, like, sort of space, because of the
facilities.
All the facilities around you and all the space around you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, sounds amazing. All righty. And so anything else that you wanted to share that I haven't covered off, anything that you think is important for somebody considering investing? Is there anything that I haven't sort of tapped on that you think you would want to know when you start your investing journey?
I just think to glean as much information as you possibly can on the because, as I say, sometimes your assumptions, while they are grounded in good values, like, as I say, I thought paying down my mortgage was the best thing. You do realize that, yes, you know, with a bit of advice and a bit of help, we got a strategy that's actually increased our wealth in 2 years beyond massively. Whatever we could have done had we just paid down our private home and the growth in that.
Yeah, you can't save yourself wealthy. We talk about that all the time. Awesome. And so as I wrap up, tell me, if Lynn today could go back to young Lynn from, I don't know, maybe the Guernsey Islands or all the way back to Zimbabwe, what would you say to young Lynn? What would you want young Lynn to know today that you think would have the most impact on your journey in a positive way?
It's a hard one because I actually have no, I think the journey we've taken has gotten us here, but I definitely do say that buying well in the beginning and making sure that what you buy is of value to other people, and so like either it's, you know, going to rent well or sell well, is, you know, stretch yourself as much as you can at the time of purchase, because it will pay dividends. It will pay dividends to do that.
Awesome. Yeah. And folks, that's coming from our CFO. That's coming from an accountant.
usually
so you don't have to take my advice, you can take hers. But of course, you know, all the disclaimers, go get your own financial advice. Awesome. Well, thank you, Lynn. Thank you for sharing. And obviously, we love having you on the team. We're so lucky to have you and Ian. I'll see you around the traps shortly. But thanks again, Lynn, for being part of our fabulous podcast.
Awesome. Thank you.
Cheers. Bye for now, guys.
Hey, thanks for listening to Property Investor Tales. Remember to subscribe so you get notified every time a new episode drops. As you can guess, I love hearing people's property investor tales. So if you'd like to share yours, then please get in touch with me via email at propertyinvestortales@positivementor.com.au. We would also love your feedback, and I would appreciate a 5-star review over on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Remember, you can watch all of these podcasts over on YouTube at Positive Mentor or at positivementor.com.au. Until then, take care, happy investing, and bye for now.